Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search Unbound.
Okay, here we go. It's incredible what taking a deep breath can do. It stops the internal monologue in its tracks and brings you out of your head and back into the present moment. It eases the anxiety buildup in your chest and brings your defenses down. It brings clarity and enables you to engage with the situation in front of you. You may not know this, but taking a deep breath is a crucial part of having tough conversations. You know those conversations where your palms get a little sweaty and the only thing you can hear is your heartbeat in your ears and your mind's rehearsal of the conversation before you even have it. The ones that fog up your brain until it gets addressed. Or it's those conversations that you avoid and it turns into baggage that you subconsciously carry around everywhere you go.
There's a big cost to avoiding these conversations.
Here's a reality check. Most tough conversations need to happen, but we first need the tools to help us navigate them in a healthy and productive fashion. That's why I brought on today's guest, David Wood, the tough conversations ninja who built the world's largest coaching business. David believes that the tough conversations we avoid are our doorways to confidence and success in both work and life. It's true. From my personal experience, I did not like having tough conversations with others, nor be on the receiving end of them. In fact, in my disease to please, I would do and say everything to avoid getting to the truth. As David says, there's a big cost to unnecessarily avoiding these conversations. But the payoff, that's pretty sweet. It becomes an opportunity to heal a relationship, grow closer to someone, and practice authenticity. Not to mention, you'll feel so much lighter at the end.
Let's change the world one tough conversation at a time.
So, take a deep breath and let's get started. Welcome back to The Ginny Show. I am joined by a fellow Aussie and a tough conversations ninja, David Wood. Welcome to The Ginny Show.
Thank you, Ginny. I'm feeling pumped. We've got two Aussies here. Anything could happen.
Absolutely. Not a barbecue, unfortunately, because this is being recorded during COVID-19, but hopefully one day we will have a barbecue, David, and we can enjoy some shrimp on the barbie, as they say over here in the States. We never say that in Australia.
All things we actually do barbecue. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. David, as I mentioned before, you are a tough conversations ninja. One of the things that I believe is a vehicle to happiness is how we communicate. And it's a very important skill to have in your toolbox, not only how to communicate, but also how to communicate and navigate when that environment is a tough conversation. So I'm curious to know too, David, what's your advice for creating space for having tough conversations and knowing when the right time to initiate it? Because it seems like it's one of those things that we put off and there never really is a right time. So how do you go about holding space for a tough conversation?
Okay, so creating space and how to initiate it, two good questions. And I think one that we might want to address for listeners before we even get to that is, do you have a tough conversation? And what does that look like? Because I've found that the mind will hide our truth opportunities from us. So how you know there's a tough conversation in your future that could really bear fruit is you've got complaints about somebody. There's someone at work, perhaps, or in your home life, they do something that bugs you and you want to change their behavior. So you've got a lazy desire that hasn't been expressed, or there's a toleration. You're just really annoyed by something, or here's a good one, you've been disappointed. You felt really disappointed and let down from someone. And this could be in your current life, people you're relating with right now, or it could be in your past. So people often say to me, oh, I don't have any tough conversations. I tend to speak my mind. Yeah, maybe you do. But when you start scanning your life and scanning your relationships and you find, oh, yeah, I didn't know that was a tough conversation. I just thought that person's a jerk. There's an opportunity there. So I want to say that my hope in this interview is that listeners will just spark some ideas and go, oh, okay, I could talk to my son about how I want to be more connected. Or I could talk to my coworker about how when they're late on stuff, it really makes it hard for me and I'd like to make a request. Like, these things are truth opportunities that are floating around.
Truth opportunities, I like it.
Tough conversations is often a misnomer. Sure, sometimes we've got the elephant in the room and there's things we know we have to address. And then, yeah, sure, people come to me, how do I have this tough conversation? But I'm even more interested in the ones we don't even know are just opportunities. And they may not be a tough conversation. When you have it, you may find it's quite easy. It's often tough for you because of all the things that you're building up in your head. So you asked two great questions about, so let's suppose we've identified them. We already know, okay, how do I do it? Creating space is a great way to ask it. How do I create space? Here's how not to do it. Go to someone and say, we need to talk.
Oh, that's what we love to hear in any kind of situation, those words. Right?
Yeah, because if you tell me we need to talk, I assume you have positive intent and that things are going to go really well and that this is good for me. No. That's not how it goes. So that's one way not to do it. Another way not to do it, I had a friend sent me a text and said, we need to talk and I'm really pissed at you. That's just not a great way to set it up. So here is a great way. I have a four-step model called the CARE model of tough conversations. And the first step is you do your own work. You clarify the issue for yourself. And there's a simple worksheet. If you like, we can give your listeners this away for free. It's a free download. It'll ask you questions, take you through it. What's your hope? Like, how could this go well? What's your fear? What are you worried? How could this be a train wreck? Super important to get clear on this. And it'll even ask you some questions like, what's your request that you could make? And what might it look from their point of view? This is going to be a game changer. Just filling in the worksheet. You may decide after doing that worksheet not to go ahead with the conversation. That's fine. But do your own work to clarify the issue. And then there's a box to check that says, I'm willing to accept these consequences. I'm willing to roll the dice with this one. Great. So let's suppose you've filled in the worksheet, you've gotten clear. Let's move to step two in the CARE model. The A stands for ask permission. And the way I set it up with people and the formula that I use, this will create the space for the conversation. So it could be something like, hey, Jenny, there's something I haven't been saying because, and then you insert your fear. But I've decided I do want to bring it up because, and you insert your hope. And this demonstrates the positive intent. Like, hey, it's something about, I haven't been talking about because I'm worried you might think I'm oversensitive and maybe you feel defensive. And I don't want that to happen. But I've decided to bring it up because I want a great working relationship with you and I kind of want to clear the air for myself. So do you have about 10 minutes now? Boom. You're asking for consent. You're demonstrating positive intent. You're showing some vulnerability. This is why I haven't been saying it because I've been a bit worried about this. And you're asking, do you have time now? Is it a good time? So that's a way to create a space for a conversation.
I like that. I like how there's lots of positive reinforcement in there and it's very clear, like what you said, what the hope is, what the intent of the conversation is to achieve. And also, you know, authenticity, like this is why I have been withholding this information from you due to this fear. Now, I can totally understand, Dave. That's great advice in the person instigating the conversation and expressing the fear and the hope. How can the person on the receiving end hold space for that conversation? Because that's something that there's a whole array of communication levels there, particularly about what we hear. Because even though you intend really well and you come at it from a place of hopefulness and to seek a resolution, people hear things very differently. People might hear, oh my God, I'm getting fired. So when you're on the receiving end, how can you hold space for that?
That's a really great question. And I don't know if I've ever been asked that. People tend to be focused on just bringing the issue. But let's suppose someone's bringing something to you. I'm going to suggest a course of action. And I'm going to say up front, you're probably not going to remember this. That's what I was going to say. That's okay. My challenge.
All right.
Take it as a challenge if you like, but you're probably not going to remember, because when someone comes at you, your automatic stuff kicks in and you start getting defensive. I go into fight, flight, or freeze. I tend to freeze. And so you may not remember this, but if you can, it can be a game changer. So let's suppose someone's bringing something to you artfully using this four-step model. It's going to be a lot easier for you because they're demonstrating intent, they're asking permission, they're showing vulnerability. But let's assume someone hasn't listened to this podcast and they haven't downloaded the CARE model and they're just coming to you, we need to talk. Look, your performance at work isn't very good, blah, blah, blah. Or, hey, I'm really upset with something you said over dinner last night. That's not the way to treat me, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, here's what you do. You breathe. That's what you do. That's your way out of the automatic response that your body's going to have. And it's a reminder, okay, breathe. I'm in a listening position here. And what you want to do is hear them, because it might be hard for you to hear them because you want to defend or run. But, you know, hey, we need to talk about your work. It's not really up to par. We might have to let you go. Breathe and see if you can actually listen to what they're saying. And then next step, if you get that one down, which again, you're probably going to forget 9 times out of 10, but if you can remember it, the next step is tell me more. Again, this puts you in a listening state. I want to understand this. I want to understand your world. Now, you know, for bonus points, and again, all you need to remember is breathe. But if you can remember, tell me more, and then reflect it back to them to check you got it. And here are some simple words you can use. I want to make sure I've got this right. Can I say it back and make sure I've got it right? That's going to help a lot, particularly if the person's angry, if they're yelling at you, could be a customer. Right? This is great. Write it down. Keep it on your computer as a post-it note. Breathe. Tell me more about that. And then let me check I got this right. Can I say it back? And that's reflecting. That's going to make sure the other person feels heard and understood and that you actually get it. And that also buys you time. 100%. Because you may not know what your response is going to be. You know what your reaction is. I want to run or screw you. But your response is a whole different thing, and this will buy you time for that. So I like that you asked me, gave me the chance to go into. We call it, in the authentic relating world, we call it emotional Aikido.
Emotional Aikido.
Aikido. Aikido, okay. Coming from the martial art, where you don't use your own force, you roll with the other person's force. So they're coming at you, you might flip them. You might fall to the ground and roll with them. So that's what you're doing. You're not pushing back. Now, I had a great opportunity to witness this not happening in prison, because I was with a co-leader and we teach this. We teach emotional Aikido, and someone was upset by something that she'd said earlier on and came to her in a break. And I could see it happen. They came to her and like, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You should have done this. That's not fair. What do you imagine she started to do? What would anyone do in that position?
I think anybody likes to be reprimanded on the spot. So she got defensive.
Yeah. She started to justify and explain why she'd done it and why she was right and why the other person was wrong. This is normal. And I saw it starting to happen, and I was close enough to just whisper in her ear one word, Aikido. She stopped. She took a breath. And she said, tell me more. What didn't work for you about that? It was poetry in motion. And she said to me later, I wish we could all have someone sitting on our shoulder to remind us. Now, look, you're going to forget. I forget. It's fine. But as soon as you do catch it, you might be halfway through your justification and you might be in an argument. And then you remember, stop, take a breath and say, tell me more. I'm sorry. I started to argue. I started to defend. Tell me more about it. This is if you have the space for it, right? Sometimes someone will be yelling at you. You just don't have it. And you might say, look, I can't listen to this right now. I'm feeling defensive. Can I go and take a few breaths and come back to you?
David, when you talk about conversations, I really want to touch on how you work with inmates. I do want to touch on that part down the track. But one thing that I have experienced as a podcaster, as an interviewer, as a teacher, as also a student, is that I find with humanity, and especially when I produce podcasts for a living. So one thing that I find in my clients and the people that they interview is that human beings, you know, we're expressive. That's why there's fashion around. That's why we like to, you know, make sure that we go on our soapbox and make a stand. We like to be seen and heard, which is my point in, I guess, a conversation of any kind, whether it be tough, whether it just be a connection conversation. I think everybody wants to be seen and heard. And would you say that going into any kind of conversation, in particularly a tough one, that is the important thing to keep in mind?
Yeah, I think that's really well said. We want to be seen and heard. And this is often what makes a tough conversation tough, is we're trying to do it at the same time. I'm trying to be seen and heard, and you're trying to be seen and heard. Mm. And it's not going to happen at the same time. It's like a colleague of mine, Jason Gore, says, it's like we're both using a walkie-talkie and we're pressing the send button at the same time.
Absolutely.
Often that's what makes it tough. And the way to break that cycle is to take turns. So if you're bringing the conversation, you can set the context. Hey, I've got something I want to talk about. It might take about 10 minutes. Is that okay? You might even say, it'll probably take me about 5 minutes to get it all out. Is that all right? And then I want to hear anything you've got to say. So you're setting up the context from the get-go. So it's more likely you're going to get to take turns. If you don't create that context, I coached a woman who didn't know how to say to her husband, I just hate seeing you get impatient with the kids. She didn't know how to say it. So I did a role play with her. And as I was role playing her position, I brought it up and said, look, I want to talk to you about the kids and how you are with the kids sometime. Is that okay? And he said, okay, in the role play. And I said, and I want to check in already before I even say what I've got to say. How is it for you even that I bring up this topic? Boom. Switch to you. You're on stage. You've got the talking stick. Because I just thought there's so much charge here. Let's give him a chance. And boy, did he have a lot to say. And I acknowledged it. I said, tell me more. Okay, is there anything else you want to say before I share what I have? Right? Talking stick. Okay, no? Great. I'm going to take the talking stick now. So, look, it's maybe a little easier for me because I've been training and teaching communication for 20 years. But when I'm triggered, I will forget. And you need just one of you to notice, oh, wait a minute, we need to take turns here. And the person with the most awareness, I figure it's their job to offer the other person the talking stick and say, you share, I'm going to listen. And this is a great tip. If you're in a conversation, you're bringing the tough conversation and you cannot get a word in, they keep on jumping in or defending or whatever. You can either name what's happening and say, I notice you've got some charge on this. I need about 2 minutes to get out my side. Would that be okay? Or do you want to talk first? It's all right. As long as you work out together who's going to talk and you don't keep on trying. Oh, well, I did that because, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but the reason I want blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what we want to avoid. And just one person's listening and then the other person's listening. That's why we have step four. And I know we haven't really gotten to step three yet, but in the CARE model, we've got clarify. And then that's for you. You fill in the worksheet. Then we've got ask permission. And then if they've said yes, we will reveal and request. That's the third step. The R stands for reveal and request. Here's the issue. Here's how I'm feeling about it. And this is what I'd like to ask you for. But then step four, very important, that's inquire. We want to find out about their world. How is it even that I'm bringing this up? It might be embarrassing for them. They might feel defensive. They might want to share their side of it. Or they might have a better idea than you've ever thought of. So that step four, inquire, is a reminder to me that we're here to work this out together. And it's not just me sharing my side. I want my time in the sun to do that. But then flip it over. What have you got to say? And I make it easy for them.
Thank you for sharing the CARE model with us, David. It's a very, very handy tool when it comes to creating space for tough conversations. You mentioned previously that you work with prison inmates, and I find this fascinating because you work with prison inmates and you also work with CEOs and people in positions of leadership. Now, if you look at the food chain or the societal structure, obviously CEOs hold a status and inmates hold a status. They're two very different positions in society. One has, as you know, authority, and as a CEO myself, you know, we can run companies, hold visions, create jobs, and the other kind of is stripped of their own rights to society and freedoms, obviously. I'm curious to know, in your work, as you've worked with both CEOs and inmates, what do you find the similarities between the two? And people might find that question to be a little shocking, but what are the similarities that you find in their approach to conversation styles?
Yeah, that's well said about there's a power dynamic, there's a status. I've done a little work in acting with status transitions, and you might start with low status, like a servant, and then see if you can transition to high status, which is someone of authority. And the prison inmates have really, they have had a lot of rights, what we would consider rights, taken away. Even the right to speak up, even the right to say my piece. If they want to speak up against a corrections officer, they might, who knows, they might be put in solitary for a bit, or they might have some time added to their sentence because they're, you know, they don't get to, their parole is negatively affected. There's such power imbalance. But what I'm present to is the similarities. And the similarities are we're all human and we want similar things. So one common tough conversation in life is, I want you to change your behavior. So maybe a CEO's got a direct report, or even another CEO of another company that does something they don't like. They might be there late for them. Well, prison inmates have people who are late for them. I coached a prison inmate who said the CEO was 10 minutes late to show up, and she couldn't leave the room until the CEO showed up for his shift. And so she was 10 minutes late to report to another department to get her property. And she copped a lot of grief from the other department because she's 10 minutes late. She can't even control it, right? So someone showing up late is an example. That happens everywhere. Someone doing something we don't like. Maybe someone's touched our property or done something. CEO can have that too. We want to correct behavior. I feel disappointed by you is another really common tough conversation. I was expecting this and you didn't do it. How do I gently hold someone accountable? We also, prison inmates have a lot of people disappointed in them. And who among us has not faced that, where we've let someone down? They were counting on us for something. We didn't show up the way they wanted to, and it's my fault. Maybe the company's not doing well and it's my fault as a CEO, and I've now got to talk to shareholders and a board. Look, the differences are really apparent when you look at CEOs and prison inmates, but I find as humans, we all want similar things, and similar things are hard for us. Now, the language will be different. The CEO might bring it in a different way to the board than a prison inmate might to a fellow prisoner, but the concepts are the same, and the CARE model, I believe, works in both scenarios. Clarify the issue for yourself. What are you worried about? What's your hope? Ask permission to have the conversation, whether it's to someone above you or someone below you. And then reveal and request. This is what's going on. I make the request, no demand. And then how is it for you that I'm asking this? Is it weird? Is it inspiring? Is it embarrassing? Is it something else? We're humans everywhere we go. That's my experience.
The Genie Show.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search Unbound.
The Genie Show, oh, how long the days are gone.
For me, when you said that, what I heard was, you know, as an inmate, the feeling of having disappointed someone or a series of people is apparent, and you actually have time and the physical living space that you have to think about that. That's a constant reminder that you've disappointed someone. As a CEO, they may experience pressures, you know, letting people down or disappointing people, but the physical space, they have a physical getaway to hopefully create a space where they can experience freedoms. But the disappointment in an inmate, I can really like feel that, just being constantly reminded and having to think about that constantly is, I can feel that.
You know, I feel that in my body. As you say, I felt some chills.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about an inmate. It was a young woman she's 23.
Dang.
And she's been in prison for 2 years. And we got to film her story. We got her on film, and she said that she was part of a robbery. She helped plan it. She wasn't part of doing it, executing it, but she helped plan it. They didn't follow the plan. Something went wrong and someone got shot and killed.
Dang.
And she's got a lot of time to think about the widow and to think about her role. Like, what she did led to a cascading series of events that had this guy die. And now she's like, how do you live with that? How do I live with that? How do I tell her? Because they're planning to bring the two of them together for restorative justice, so she can have a conversation with her victims, with the victims of her crime. She said, how do I tell her that I'm so sorry that her son's now suicidal and her daughter's dropped out of college and the whole family's affected and I did that? Yeah, she's got a lot of time to reflect on that and how to have that tough conversation with the widow.
When you say that to me too, David, the way that I think is you think of leadership and the people and the stakeholders that they're accountable to. But that, what you just mentioned there, that's an entirely different level of accountability and bravery. Like, to have that restorative justice, to go to the family and, you know, say sorry. It's not like a check that a shareholder can write the next day. We know money can replace money ultimately, right? When you lose money, yes, you've lost money, and there's things that you lose as a result of losing money, but you can't bring back a human from the dead. So yeah. I can only imagine that level of accountability that on a deeper level that inmates must feel.
Well, you've got me thinking now that perhaps the stakes for inmates are even a little higher.
Yeah.
Like, a CEO could lose their company, they could lose a fortune, but a prison inmate can get beaten or killed if they say the wrong thing. They can lose more freedom time, and they've got their family who won't even talk to them sometimes because of what they did. So I hadn't thought about that before, but the stakes might even be a little higher.
That's kind of what it was feeling like for me when you were saying that. As you said, CEO can lose everything, but it's not as if they lose all their freedoms or their rights. They still have a position, quote unquote, in the world. But I do feel the stakes are higher, and I can imagine mitigating that kind of level of accountability would take a whole different emotional approach. And sometimes inmates don't have access to the resources to have and hold that space for that kind of conversation in their mind or in their day-to-day, I guess.
Well, they do now in Colorado. And so I want to give a plug for the nonprofit that I've been supporting. AuthenticRelating.org is the nonprofit. And I tell you what, their executive director is amazing. She cold calls prisons. We've got to get this in there. We want to help the inmates to be able to relate to other humans so that they don't recidivate and end up back in prison. So now in Colorado, they're getting some of those resources, and if Lori Lazar has anything to say about it, it's going to spread to the rest of the world.
David, I want to kind of, we've touched on how, no matter if you're a CEO or an inmate, what kind of binds us is the fact that we're human, the human condition. One of the reasons why people avoid having tough conversations is anxiety and the fear of loss and vulnerability that comes with these tough conversations. And also, ultimately, pursuing a tough conversation also means that you're giving up some sense of control, which I know for some people, especially, you know, leaders, find that very difficult and challenging to do. Can you share an example from your personal experience of how you've conquered that anxiety and lack of control when it comes to having one of those tough conversations?
All right. Well, I'm at the risk of oversharing, I'm going to share one of my hardest ones in the last, well, in my life. It's been one of the hardest ones, and it happened a couple of months ago. Not very good for a corporate experience, but this was a personal one where I live in the mountains and I overlook this beautiful valley. I don't have any immediate neighbors, so I have a real sense of privacy. And one day I walk out on my balcony and I'm on the phone and I need to pee. And I'm thinking, I don't want to go back inside and in the dark and like that dingy bathroom. Look at this glorious day. I'm going to pee over onto the grass, over my balcony, onto the grass, living in the mountains. And I didn't really give it much of a thought. I'm just having a great time. It's glorious. And then I heard a door shut down below. And my tenant had been away for 5 days. I just felt really alone in this place. And it hadn't even occurred to me. She'd come home in the last 10 minutes. And I hear this door shut. And I'm now picturing her having a cup of tea on her veranda, not a care in the world, and this stream of urine comes over the balcony.
Oh, no.
I was horrified. You know, the social taboo around urinating, like it's a bodily function, but we don't really like other people to witness it. And so something that might have been okay if she wasn't home, because no one would ever know about it, was now in my world a huge thing. I couldn't think about anything else for the next 4 hours. In my mind, here's what happens, because the mind blows things up. In my mind, I'm a man, she's a woman, so now I'm in trouble in the whole Me Too movement. Yep. I'm a landlord, she's a tenant, so there's a power imbalance, and here I am subjecting her to feeling unsafe in her own home. I was just mortified, and I couldn't for 4 hours. I'm an expert in this. I applied my own model and I could work out what to say if she brought it up, but I could not for the life of me think of how I was going to raise it with her, particularly given there was a 10% chance she hadn't even seen it.
Wow.
She might have just shut the door at that time for some other reason. So it's the kind of thing I would have lost sleep over. I was even imagining her complaining to some tribunal and then it getting into the papers. Like, the mind can really generate the worst case scenario. And for many of the things that some of our listeners may have been carrying for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, things you may have felt shame by. I mean, I stole stuff when I was a kid and carried the shame of that. I've coached a friend who burglarized a house when he was a teenager and he's carried the shame of that. We build it up sometimes bigger in our mind. So how did I conquer the fear? Well, for 4 hours, I didn't. I was thinking, and I talked to three different coaches as well, and they all had three different answers. Oh, plus, I might also add, they laughed their ass off.
Mm.
They were trying to be supportive. At the same time, they could not stop laughing at the scenario. And now I can see how it's funny from one point of view, but it was not funny to me at that point.
Yeah.
So I talked it out and I got to the core of it when I did the clarification step. My fear was that she might feel unsafe in her own home and I did not want that to happen. And also I was super embarrassed and I did not want to have that awkward conversation. But I was worried that she would judge me and that she would be afraid and she'd be really angry and disgusted. And I didn't want to face that in someone else. So after 4 hours of talking it through and getting to the point where I could leave it and I could just wait and see if she brings it up, that's valid. I don't have to storm in there and maybe make things worse. I could wait and see if things seem strained and then I could maybe bring it up. But I was just in mid-conversation with someone and I just realized, you know what? We're two human beings. There's always a way.
Absolutely.
There's always a way.
Now, let me ask you a question, David. This is going to be a little bit off center. So you've just talked me through for the past half an hour, you know, how to hold space to have a conversation as the person instigating it and how to be on the receiving end of that conversation and a personal experience that you went through, going over your mind, how to play out having this really difficult, potentially embarrassing conversation. Now, you're obviously someone who's hyper aware of the impact of having these tough conversations, what they actually result in and what they achieve. I feel most of humanity avoid having these tough conversations. So you've got one issue layered upon another and another and another, and it gets to a point where there's an explosion or some form of breakdown, breakup of some sort. What are the consequences, or what have you seen to be some of the biggest consequences, other than obviously like what I mentioned, breakups, breakdowns?
Yeah.
What are some of the more tangible consequences of avoiding having these conversations over a period of time?
Great question. Well, look at my example. I would have lost sleep. I couldn't focus on anything else. I was upset. And that would have stayed with me on some level forever if I didn't clear it. It would get more subtle and I get used to it and it'd be a little baggage that has me stoop just a little bit more, but it'd be something I'm always worried could bite me in the butt. You know, had she witnessed it and I don't bring it up, she might end up moving out. And so now I lose a tenant, or she might be really unhappy and now she's got to go and complain to a bunch of people and I've caused distress with somebody else. So often we decide we're not going to bring it up because, as you've really well pointed out, we might feel awkward, we might feel really vulnerable. And if you don't have the four-step care model, you might make it worse. Even with the care model, you might blow up something that could have been a landmine that didn't get set off. But even when you try and preserve the relationship, you can destroy the relationship just by preserving it. So
you can destroy the relationship just by attempting to preserve it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I believe that we're going to pay one way or another. We either pay slowly over time, and I would have if I had not gone to my tenant and talked about it, or we're going to pay up front with a bit of awkwardness and a bit of vulnerability and then reap the rewards over time. So in my example, I finally went, I knocked on the door and I said, do you have a few minutes for me to tell you about something I'm so embarrassed about I could die? That's how I brought it up.
Wow.
Which is basically another, you know, an adjustment of the model that I suggested. Hey, there's something I haven't been saying and here's why, right? I'm just super embarrassed. But I do want to bring it up because I really want you to feel safe in your own home and I want to clear the air between us if that's needed. Is that okay? Do you have a few minutes? And she's like, oh my God, yeah, what is it? Turned out she hadn't seen it. Can you believe that?
I can actually, because this is what we create in our heads, right? We create the most catastrophic possible outcome, and she didn't even see the urine.
Urine. Yeah. So, but I was ready for that. I said, then I'm about to make this 10 times worse. Are you ready? And then we had a laugh about it. She said she hadn't seen it, and she was generous. She was like, look, I like to pee in the woods. Guys in particular like to pee in the woods. It's no big deal. I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. Now, if she'd had another reaction, let's say she was really upset, perfect. We get to handle that and I get to apologize and find out how I can make amends.
Yeah.
Right? So I think there's a big cost to avoiding these conversations, and I understand why we might want to avoid them, particularly when you don't have the model. But now that you have the four-step model, you can be a superhuman, really, because most people in society will not go and have these conversations. But you with the model, you can now go and talk to your cousin who said something at the wedding that you just felt distant from them since because you felt offended because they made fun. My cousin made fun of me in his toast at the wedding, and I didn't even remember it. I kind of buried it. But when he brought it up 10 years later, I was like, you son of a bitch.
Wow.
I was like, you know what? I was upset by that and I haven't thought about it since, but I bet subconsciously it was there. And he said, I want to apologize. I was like, wow, thank you. How impressed was I with this guy that he came and brought that tough conversation with me?
Yeah.
So you can be a role model for other people when you do this, and it will ripple out because people have said, oh, that gave me the courage to go and have my tough conversation.
Yeah.
Let's change the world one tough conversation at a time.
I love it. I love it. David, you've shared such awesome wisdom with us, and I thank you for spending time with me and sharing some tools and some tangible takeaways on how to have tough conversations. I feel a great leader, other than the ability to have and the skill set to have tough conversations, a leader is self-sourced. And one of the ways to be self-sourced is to have a really solid morning routine. What is your morning routine? How do you start your day?
Well, there was a bit of stretching going on this morning. I mean, just like before I even get up, I'm just noticing I'm like stretching out the body. I was actually present to what was going on in my head, which was great because I had this idea out of nowhere to stream everything I do on Zoom. I do so much on Zoom, but I could stream it on Twitch so that it could be like a TV channel. So like this could have been streamed to Zoom right now. And so that was exciting. I'm like, oh my God, this is a great time in the morning to be present. I keep water by the bed. So the first thing I can do is hydrate. And then I take the dog out to pee. Right. Which if I didn't have a dog, I wouldn't even bother going outside, but I like to pee in the woods. Right.
We've established that. I was going to say, just to clarify, the dog is peeing, not you.
Right. Well, both of us.
Both of us. Gotcha.
So, right. Okay. She takes me out to pee.
Just wanted to clarify there because, you know, people are writing down these routines. They may want to know who's peeing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think I have a really strong routine, but I drink water. I'll fill up a water bottle. That's first while the tea is steeping. So right. I'll make my cup of black tea and then that's steeping. The water has to be drunk first because I have to rehydrate. And then I get a cup of tea and I start work. Unless it's a weekend in which I will probably go straight to the computer and play StarCraft II on the computer, which is my video game addiction.
Fantastic. I love it. It's a very unique morning routine. So thank you for sharing that, David. And before we let you go, I'd love to know, what is your personal definition of happiness?
Enjoying where you are.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, when you're enjoying where you are, then that's a good time.
And not wishing to be somewhere else, right?
Yeah, and when you're not, that's a lot of suffering. A friend of mine pointed this out recently. He was saying he's been meditating 6 hours a day. And he shared a bit about it. And he said he'll notice thoughts like, is it time yet? And how long do I have to go? And I said, I count during my meditations. I count my breath so I have a feeling of progress. He said, yeah, why would I create that suffering for myself? It's fascinating. I'm creating suffering. The second I go, I wonder how long there is. So I've started noticing a lot where I want to be somewhere else and I want it to be different. And I want it to be 3 o'clock, which is in 13 minutes, by the way, so that I can start playing StarCraft. I noticed I was doing that. I'm like, wow. And Byron Katie says, you kick yourself out of heaven. It could be wonderful right where you are and you wouldn't even know because you're thinking, oh, this would be better with a cup of tea. Or this will be better when this is over and I can relax for the day. So I'm trying to notice that, and that's happiness if I'm just enjoying right where I am right now. And I just took a breath just saying that and got more present. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I really, really appreciate the wisdom that you've shared today on The Ginny Show. I'm sure there's a ton of gold in this conversation, no pun intended with the urine or anything like that, a ton of gold in this conversation that people can use to cultivate and have the ability to have these conversations and to communicate in a more deeper and authentic way. Please tell the good people of The Ginny Show where we can find this care guide to have these conversations.
Yeah, thank you. I'll tell you the link, and there are three simple invites I have for listeners. The link is playforreal.life, not .com. I got the .life because I can. Playforreal.life. And three things you can do if it calls to you. You can download the 4-step Tough Conversations care model. It's a free download. You can subscribe to the Tough Conversations with David Wood podcast if you want to listen to me as well as the amazing Ginny. And the third thing, if something resonated here for you and you've been interested in coaching for your business and your life, I don't do just one because they intertwine. But if you're interested in like, I want to up level, and tough conversations are a part of what I do. It's just, but it's a much bigger realm that I play in. Request a session with me. And if you qualify, I don't charge for that session because it's how I find the right people to work with long term. And all you need to qualify is you're seriously interested in coaching, and we'll create a plan for your life and your work. It might be that that's it. Go and implement the plan and let me know how it goes. Or if we both see how coaching could make a really big impact, we'll talk about setting up coaching. So you can do all three of those things at playforreal.life.
Fantastic. David, thanks so much for joining me on The Ginny Show. Make sure you check him out at playforreal.life. Thank you, David. The Ginny Show. Oh, how long it takes,
I've gone on. Hi, this is Brooke DeVard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search Unbound.